Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 57 for September 12th, 2007. ET Ringtone. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, ladies and gentlemen. And we're back in studio, which is good. We've got Scott Bourne back with us, which is even better.
Hey, how's everybody
from the doing? Apple Phone Show. I'm sure he's been very busy with all the news. We'll get to that in a second. Also here, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps.
Hello.
Back from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And
got all my bags.
From Baston, Andy Excella Ignatko.
I'd just like to report that the surge in downtown Dorchester is working. We put four more cops on E Street and Broadway, and those kids are not hanging out by the candy store. We're welcomed as liberators in that neighborhood.
And how is the Dorchester coalition government working out?
Oh, they're wonderful. The thing is, though, you got to get on the good side. If you get into the E Street Brownie Club, you're in. You're in like Flynn, for God's sake.
For God's sake. You do that well. I haven't heard you do that before. Maybe you're a little nervous about doing it in the environments you live. But
the question is, Leo, which one is my fake voice?
That's right.
So now you're wondering.
Look at good accent. Are you from that area?
No, my mom was born in downtown Boston. She packs a cat and have a yard. My dad was born in Western Pennsylvania, so he parks the car in Harvard Yard. My theory is that the two R's canceled each other out, leaving me with normal R's.
It's like signs. It's like waveforms.
Like two Legos.
Two Legos interlocking to form one whole.
I try not to think about that.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we are here. We are gathered together to talk about all things Mac. And actually, Scott's been giving us a little tutorial in getting ringtones working.
Yeah.
So because you said it just started working on your system now?
It started last night. They kind of rolled it out. First, there was you could see that you could do ringtones, and then but you couldn't actually download them. And then they seemed to roll it feature by feature. And then sometime this morning, it was all working. And most people don't know that it's working because they don't know what to look for. There's a new field that you can put on your library list.
Right. Let me open iTunes here, and everybody should
open
follow
iTunes.
Along.
Everybody, follow along, children.
Follow along with Mr. Apple Phone Show.
So what you want to do is make sure that you've got, to make it easy to see, go to your music library.
Oh, wait a minute. I reopened iTunes and it says, you can create iPhone ringtones from many songs produced from the iTunes. Do you want to check to the iTunes store? And then it says, check songs. So this did this when I opened iTunes after docking my phone.
Yeah, and what that does is that's seeing if any of the songs in your current library are ringtonable.
So the first time you dock your phone with seven with the current version of iTunes, or 7.1.2, I believe. 7.4.1, 7.4.1(2). So the first time you dock your phone, that's the thing it says?
That's what it says. Now, okay. But that won't help you, though, because you probably don't have that field enabled in iTunes. So you need to enable that field. So those of you on a Mac, first of all, bend down one knee. Thank God you're on a Mac. And then hit Command-J. And you will see that you have several selections. Those of you on a Windows machine, I feel sorry for you. Hit Control-J to get to the view options.
Jeez. And by the way, let me tell you something. The Control key makes a lot more sense than the Command-Fan Apple key, which nobody who first gets a Mac can tell. When you say the command key, they say, where's that? I don't see command on my keyboard. That's by the way. I just want to point that out, Scott, that the control does make a little more sense than command.
My reference wasn't actually to the key. It was to the rest of the experience.
Oh, look, there's a little bell.
There's a little bell.
And I have ringtonable stuff.
You select ringtone, click OK. Now the bell comes up. So anything in your library that's ringtonable, you'll see it fall in that category.
Oh, good.
Now, here's the bad
category for you, Leo.
Yeah, Uncle Cracker, Drift Away.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's only 500,000 songs. Now, when I first heard 500,000 songs, I was like, wow, that's a lot of songs. Turns out, only about 8 of mine are in those 500,000.
Isn't that interesting? Well, on mine, and I have 7,000 songs in my library, but it looks like only about 25 are ringtonable. So yeah, who are the ringtonable songs?
Well, it's just deals that they're trying to still work out with music publishers to get them to accept the additional deal to make a song a ringtone. So as more music publishers come on board, we'll see that round out.
Now, Alex, you've been using iToner from the great people at Ambrosia Software, which
I love.
$15 program that eliminates this whole silly thing.
Yeah, I mean, the only issue that you have is that there's kind of right now, there's a bit of a, and you don't know whether it's a cat and mouse or whether Apple's just kind of, it's just Apple's just kind of squishing people by accident, but Apple's changing the way, you know, it's blowing away a lot of the ways people were getting ringtones onto their iPhones. So, you know, when I haven't actually upgraded my iTunes, because there's nothing in the new iTunes except for ringtones that I really need. And so I haven't bothered, because right now I can sync quite nicely. So iToner, I can make anything I want. I can go in to GarageBand, edit any piece of music, something I've sampled, any of my songs, anything that I want. I get that set up the way I like it. I then save it out as an MP3. I drag it onto iToner. I hit sync, and it's on my phone.
I have to say, though, I'm looking now at the interface in iTunes. Once you say, so I've picked Hungry Like a Wolf, Duran Duran, you now can select any 15-second portion of it. Actually, you can make it longer than 15 seconds if you want. Have you seen the interface to this? 30 seconds, right, Scott, is the max. This is pretty slick. So you can choose fade in, fade out. You select whatever portion you want, and you can make it anything from 3 seconds to 30 seconds. You can have a gap from half a second to 5 seconds, and then you can preview it before you buy. I have to say, let me preview it. This is Duran Duran, My Ringtone. Oh. See, too bad Merlin's not here. Now, that's a pretty... Okay, so maybe I don't want them singing, so I can resize this. I have to say, that's pretty impressive.
And I want to point out what's interesting about this, Leo, is that these are customizable, meaning you're picking which part of that song you want it to be, whereas many of the other cell phone companies, you get to listen to the 30 seconds they want.
Most of the time. This is the first time I've ever seen this. Can you do that? You can do that with iToner, though, right? Because you're kind of editing.
Yeah, same thing.
You can do anything you want with it. And the point is you can use any music that you want. You can do it anytime you want, and you're not paying a dollar every time you want to do it. And that's assuming you have the song. You know, and I think that the ringtones on iTunes are better than any other ringtone option commercially available. But most of the people that I know don't use even the ones that the other phones are using. They're uploading ringtones to some website that then sends it picture
geeky
mail.
You know, it's smart geeky people, though. I think kids, like my son, bought dozens of ringtones.
Well, and the thing
over
is, I guess
my dead body, I might add.
For me, I feel like it's fine. I'm hoping that Apple will, once they settle in and they get whatever fix, they just leave the applications that make it alone and let us just keep on doing what we want to do. And then they can do whatever they want.
I don't think they will. I think we're seeing the new Apple. The monopolist Apple. No, I think they're going to start getting aggressive about this kind of thing. What do you think? What do you think, Andy?
I have two different reactions. I mean, I've always thought that commercial ringtones are like those little coin operated horsey machines in front of the supermarket. I mean, there's some little kids who seem to enjoy them. I can walk straight by them without being tempted at all. In terms of Apple locking people out of ringtones, again, it depends. I think that they're not terribly interested in stopping a tool like that from working, because you need a certain level of sophistication in order to make it work, even if it's a very, very simple level of sophistication. You always it's hard to keep in mind that one of the reasons why the iTunes store took off the way it did was because so many people didn't want to bother ripping CDs. There are some people who don't want to do a conversion like that. They want to simply say, oh, $1 and I get to have this ringtone. Cool. I got a buck. I'm financially well off enough that in the future I'll be making another dollar. So cool for me.
I have to say the interface is I have a mixed feeling about the interface, because on the one hand, that basic user you're talking about isn't going to want to slide this around and choose a waveform, and might even be intimidating to actually even see a waveform. On the other hand, it is pretty slick. It kind of makes you want to make a ringtone just to play with it. It looks like a little GarageBand-y, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I really do like the app. It's one of those things where it's kind of in the same broad category for me as getting a tattoo, where the amount of effort I'd have to put into figuring out exactly what I would pick far exceeds whatever benefit I would get from actually having it.
So let me see how this loops. This is my Duran Duran, Hungry Like a Wolf. cut out the singing, so just keep going, right? That's going to really annoy everybody in the 7-Eleven when my phone goes off, don't you think? And isn't that what you look for?
How happy could they be to begin with?
So I have to admit, I didn't really think that. I mean, I've never added any ringtones until I got iToner and started testing it. I hadn't added ever a ringtone to my phone because most of the time it's just on vibrate. And I have to admit, I started having so much fun with it. I think partially because I could edit it myself, right, that I have 30 of them on.
Show of hands now. I want to hear different ringtones. So what are you using right now, Alex, as your primary iPhone ringtone?
Hold on, I got to open it up.
And Andy Yannacco, you, my friend, lucked out. Just when you had to give your iPhone review unit back, they dropped the price $200. You're making us look like chumps.
Just for me.
So this is what I have right now. This is the one that I'm... So anyway, so that's
Swahili for pick up the phone, you bozo.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then when my wife calls, you know, it's... wait, hold on.
Don't you hate the... Is that Dave Matthews? That's good.
Yeah,
I like that. That's a good
choice. And it works really well. I mean, both of them, you know, I found songs that will sound really, really good.
Well, that's a complaint we've all had, is that you can't hear the standard iPhone ringtones.
Well, okay. I've solved that problem.
What do you use?
Me? My standard ringtone...
Yeah, you can hear that.
Why Can't This Be Love by Van Halen?
You can
Eddie
hear that.
On the guitar.
You can definitely hear that. All right, Andy.
Well, because the phone interferes with recording, I have, of course, turned off my phone and left it on the other side of the office. But it's the standard analog ringing phone tone. Because
yeah, that's what I've been using.
Partly because, for two reasons. Number one, because I'm of that generation where a ringing telephone actually gets my attention very, very quickly. Because as a kid, that's your reason for jumping up from the dinner table and running into the living room. But also because it's a loud, piercing, distinctive sound that penetrates your shirt pocket and cannot be mistaken for anything else. I did play around with custom ringtones, you know, two or three years ago, but I'd find myself like, you know, in a store thinking, oh, wow, Tony Bennett, I really love this song.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, it's my phone. Holy crap. And, you know.
Plus, there is a high annoyance factor.
Well, that's Chris Breen has a great saying about this. When we first were talking about the iPhone and people were complaining about lack of custom ringtones, he chipped in and said, you know what? I consider that a feature.
Yeah, that's a plus. Yeah. Yeah. Now, if they just could take the phone out, that would really be something.
And then Andy and I were talking the other day about how the people who have custom ringtones tend to take a lot longer to answer their phone because they want to make sure you hear the song.
Oh, how annoying.
I think we're going to give everybody the ultimate custom ringtone. Everybody start your edit points in 2 seconds. I'm going to give it to you. Okay, ready? Hi, I have a much better ringtone than yours because it's so unique. Boy, what a unique and concurrent, what a unique person I am for having a ringtone that's so different. I'm better than you.
I like it. I hate those talking ringtones. Those are really annoying.
Those rap ringtones that cost $30 a month.
Hey, you, answer the phone. I hate that stuff. But yeah, that's the kind of thing kids like.
Apple, you know, people are not happy with Apple lately for some of their decisions. But let's give them credit. They didn't put one of those deals in place where you've got to pay monthly to have the same ringtone.
At least you own it for 99 cents. And 99 cents is actually lower than the going rate. So there you go. Some rumors that Apple actually wants to do lower pricing on video, too, on TV shows, down to 99 cents. And that might be one of the reasons NBC was a little miffed with them. What's the latest on the Apple NBC rift?
Well, I think that all the stuff is going off the air next week, isn't it?
Oh, that kills
or
me.
Soon. I mean, all the NBC stuff. They're not gonna, I don't think Apple's going to let NBC cash in on a new season of Heroes and so on and so forth, and then leave. I think that they're planning to.
Didn't NBC say though? No, wait a minute. We've got a contract. We insist on staying through December.
Yeah, but for all that, they've already put all their content on Amazon. So
right, and this new Hulu. Hulu. So, do you think this is a rumor that Apple wanted to reduce? I love the idea of a 99-cent TV show.
I don't know if I like that. I mean, there's a point at which you really have to realize that you're in business with other people. 99-cent TV downloads would be great for Apple and would be great for me, but it's really more of a play that makes it easier to sell iPods than a play that makes it easier for NBC and CBS and Bravo and all these other companies to make money.
Well, wait a minute, though. Let's say a million people.
If you left it to them, they'd charge $5 per half hour episode. I realize that, but at 99 cents, I really want to talk to the TV people to figure out, do they think that they can actually make money off of this?
Well, remember, it's incremental income they didn't have a year ago. It's, you know, they're already making their money on advertising, cable deals.
But Leo, if NBC said, by the way, we're putting your podcast on our website, we're going to give you one penny for every million downloads. It's a penny you wouldn't have had before. You probably would say, well, no, I'd actually rather go to this other guy who might give me a dollar.
Yeah. Okay. So if there's a choice, you're right. If there's a choice, but excuse me, who buys video? Who uses Unbox? Does anybody use Unbox?
Everybody will if all the networks decide to start go to Unbox instead of putting their stuff on the iTunes
store. This is the Amazon.com video store.
I mean,
I don't know if they will, though. The problem is that a lot of this has to do with it being easy. You know what I mean? And the thing is that if it's off, I just don't think a web page based store will ever work as well as
iTunes. Has some advantages, doesn't it? Yeah.
You know, just being able to click on it and boom, it's all there. It's all handled. It's all taken care of for you. The web pages are rougher. And what happens is it's a very, very small. I think there's a very small barrier for entry for people to just go, you know what, I'm just going to torrent this.
Yeah. Plus the biggest advantage that Apple has is that they control the hardware, they control the software, and they control the service. But I'm just concerned about, there's a point at which if Apple tries to cut the price more aggressively, then again, Bravo will continue to put like the sort of crap shows that no one's watching up on the iTunes store. But when they have a prestige show, like the new series of Project Runway, they're going to start asking around to say, well, look, you know, who's going to give me $3 per episode? Who's going to give me a minimum commitment of $20 for the entire series? And it's difficult to imagine that Apple can just dictate whatever price they want and it'll all come out okay. There's a point at which things start to break.
I have a theory that it has nothing to do with what they expect it to be. I think it's a negotiation tactic.
Well, and we should point out that Unbox requires Windows or TiVo. It does not work on a Mac in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I go jogging with a TiVo on your wrist.
Yeah. Well, you can put it on a Creative Zen, but excuse me, how many Creative Zens are there and how many iPod videos are there?
Yeah. I think there's one more Creative Zen than there are Zunes.
Zen plus Zune equals nothing. So, you know, I mean, you have to watch this on your PC, or if you've got a TiVo, you can get it to your TV, I guess.
I think the other thing that these networks are going to be running up against, not right now, but probably another, you know, 12 to 36 months down the road, is that as more and more money starts rolling into what we used to call podcasting and what we're really calling, you know, just online media development, you know, as those shows start to pick up in quality, the big question is whether Apple starts to really make their marketplace more open to independent producers. And when they do that, it really starts to go more head to head with, if Steve gets tired of dealing, you know, and wants to have 99 cent things.
You've been saying this independent producer thing for a while, though. I don't see any evidence.
Well, I think it's coming, though. I mean, I think that Apple, it's not going to come until Apple gets, it's if things break down.
It's Apple's last choice, though. It's not Apple's first choice.
I think it's Apple's eventual choice. I don't think that the quality of the videos are high enough yet. I don't think that that the people are ready. People, the producers are ready for it yet. I don't think Apple's in a corner enough yet. But I think that if talks break down, the next step. I mean, Apple has once again a vertical market from the very beginning tools all the way to the distribution. If they open that. They open that stream up a little bit, it causes a lot of trouble really, really fast. You know, and when we look at the quality of the shows, I mean, the shows aren't that good right now, but we're only inches away from producing quality shows that are the same quality of, you know, what we saw on Discovery Channel, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, you know. And so, and that stuff, you know, especially in niche markets could be, you know, it starts to once again divide up the viewership a lot more. And that's really bad for the broadcasters. I don't think it's going to happen. I think we're just slowly going towards that. I think that by having podcasting, you know, in iTunes, I mean, I think it's a way to slowly kind of keep that moving forward.
Apple's also pulled a nice one, another fast one. You get a lot of attention for the $200 price cut, which people were howling about. And I'm sorry, Scott and Andy, you didn't get to weigh in on that last week when we had our roundtable in Vancouver, but please, you have anything to say about it, do. But also now I'm getting a lot of heated email from people who've discovered that the iPod, the new video iPods, require a special chip-enabled cable, $60, $50 cable from Apple, and no longer work with standard multimedia cables. And many people, most people, everybody who I've heard from, says this is just a monopolistic move, a greedy monopolistic move on Apple's part. Discuss.
It's the old Silicon Graphics. The computer's $25,000 and the cable's $14,000.
Right, right. And, it's very frustrating. You know, I have to say, you have to buy a new cable.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I know that I get a lot of heat for it. I tend to think Apple makes more good decisions than bad. I think this is a bad decision. And I think this particular decision will potentially, anger some people because it is so blatantly clear why they're doing it. There's no technological reason for them to create this proprietary cable.
Is it blatantly clear why they're doing it? If I'm waiting to hear back from Apple on if there's an actual technical reason why they wanted to do this. If the fact that they're putting a chip in the cable means that this video feature can do something really, really good that the previous version couldn't do. Now, believe me, I am on the side of the proletariat on this one. The idea of having to replace a cable to get no new features, that there's just no excuse for that. No more than when Epson and Canon put chips inside their ink cartridges to as a safety feature to make sure that people are getting their quality cable, the most high quality printouts when actually
on just their $5,000 a gallon ink.
Yeah, I mean that's obviously rubbish, but I want to find out exactly why this decision was made first. I mean I do think that if we learned anything from the price drop last week, it's that, man, our affection for Apple can turn on a dime. We think that Apple loves us, and anytime that something happens that we don't like, we're very, very quick to decide that they're out to just screw us over, you know.
Well, I said that on the show last week, that the Apple cult of the Mac is a double-edged sword for Steve. And I think while he's been getting a lot of benefit from it for a long time, last week proved that it can go both ways.
Well, I think Scott's right that Apple doesn't screw up very often. And so we don't see that kind of that upset very often. But as someone who bought one on the first day, it didn't really bother me. The price change didn't really, I felt like I got $200 of love out of it for the first 2 months. And so, but I have to say,
$200 is nothing if you went to the right bar.
Sorry?
I'm sorry, $200 worth of love if you went to the right bar with them on the right day.
Yeah, but this is last 2 months. There's a difference.
I will say that as soon as I saw that video wasn't working, I was actually going to go out. I tend to sample a lot of these players, and the only player that I didn't have really in the form factor was that little Nano with the little Nano. And I was planning to get it, and I was like, well, it's a really small screen, but at least I can plug it into blah 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 blah. Blah. And as soon as I saw that go out, it was a no go. I mean, I was just like, well, we'll just wait and see if Apple sorts this out, because I'm sure it's a software fix. They could run an update and make it better. In fact, a hacker could probably run an update and make it better.
The lawyers at Coughlin, Stoya, Geller, Rudman, and Robbins, and I'm sure that those words cast a chill into Scott Bourne's heart. They're suing Cupertino, saying Apple's a monopoly, and they're saying the inability of the new line to play competing formats is just part of the case. This is more evidence that the company is acting like a monopolist and not competitive.
Sounds like one of Robbins' ideas. Ever since he made Partner, he's been really sure.
Let's go after Apple! Let's go after Apple!
Neener, neener, neener. Actually,
here's the thing. I say, sigh. That's all I have to say about that. Sigh.
It's Charlie Brown like sighs when he's leaning on the wall with kindness.
It's like we've come into this world where, the minute you got $1.99 in your pocket, somebody's got $1.98 going to sue you.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not a fan of lawsuits, but I do think that they're making a point that, Microsoft got a lot of heat because it had 97% or 96% of the operating system market. Department of Justice sued him in 98, and that thing's kind of still not over. Apple has, maybe not quite the market share on the iPods, but I would say they're pretty close to a monopoly. And I think many people have said, oh, Apple's better than Microsoft. I think when Apple has as much of a monopoly as Microsoft, I think you'll see they're no different. It may be even worse in some regards.
Well, I think this should be the providence of the United States government, not private law firms.
Well, I agree. I agree.
If there's actually monopolistic tendencies on behalf of any company, the government has a duty to take care
of it. You got
to
remember who's in charge in Washington right now. I don't think.
Well, we got a government that's monopolistic. So what are we going to do?
There hasn't been an antitrust case in some time. I think.
I think it's much better if this be the result of the will of the people and not the will of the government. We already seen the FCC. What happened when the FCC? 10 people decide that something needs to be removed from the air. Yeah. If people really care enough about this cable idea, they will fund a class action suit and they will put enough heat on Apple that they have to roll
it
back.
Or they just won't buy it.
I think we jumped topics there, Andy. I mean, I'm not on the cable, I agree, but I mean, in terms of Apple being a monopoly, like in the terms of the Microsoft,
being a monopoly is meaningless unless you use your monopoly wield your monopoly power.
I'm saying when you start to affect the market as opposed to what consumers can do, that's when the government steps in. When you start making it impossible for anybody else to hook one piece of sand to another piece of sand with a piece of copper, which defines every piece of electronics out there, then I think the mighty hammer of justice needs to smash down on your head very, very quickly and very, very repeatedly. But I mean,
these private lawsuits, for the most part, they fail. For the most part. They either they generate a quick payoff, which is what most of them are designed to do, or, they end up in court for 10 years and nothing happens. And it's just, all I can say is I repeat, sigh.
Here's something that'll cheer you up, Scott.
Thank you.
The iPhone SIM-free unlock is causing all sorts of problems for people who have used it. They're, by the way, they decided to sell this as a wholesale unlock. They're not selling to end users. They're going to sell to cell phone vendors and people who will wholesale unlock it. Probably that way they don't have to deal with end users. But according to a number of reports, people are having trouble with the unlock.
You think?
as Gizmodo reported, not my favorite, but they reported that there's PIN security, and when there's a PIN protected SIM card, it doesn't work. The PIN has to be disabled. Well, okay, that's fine. We don't know a lot of people are using it yet, so that's, I guess we'll have to wait.
I just want to point out that I would love to see an unlocked phone. And if somebody has an unlocked
phone... Well, I got to point out, Ryan offered a chance for you to see it. You insisted he do it on the show and et cetera, and you didn't want it.
I asked Ryan to bring his unlocked phone to my studio so that I could video and audio tape for posterity's sake and a record that it existed and it worked. And I make that offer to anyone, not just Ryan.
Well, he offered to do it at a neutral middle ground and you turned him down.
I turned him down because I couldn't verify the authenticity without my assets in place. So I want
the amazing Randy of this podcast.
I want anybody. Let's take Ryan out of the equation because that's a hot button. Let's anybody bring me an unlocked phone, please. And I will listen. I would think that if you're an unlocker, the ultimate thing to do is to get in front of the largest iPhone audience in the world, which I have on the Apple Phone Show. So bring it to me and I will tout your skill.
Well, remember, they don't have any incentive. It's the iPhone SIM free people. Have they contacted you?
Are you kidding me? Listen, I saw their ad right next to the guy that's selling oceanfront property in Phoenix.
Really? So you're skeptical about it?
Did you see the details of how that thing works? I mean, you got to be ridiculously out of your mind to believe that this thing is for real. You have to buy all this stuff sight unseen. It's from some guy at, come on. Look at the details and tell me, Leo, you really think that's a real deal?
Well, I think that's probably why they're doing it through resellers, right? Because it is complicated and the reseller can automate the process. Scott, the fact that they're able to do it in software is kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah.
In the first place. I'm not surprised it takes some hoops to jump through.
I just want to see somebody prove it to me. And then I will promote it. I'll put it like that.
Well, I've talked to two people who have, in fact, I've had calls from two people who on an unlocked phone, so I know it works. What is your skepticism?
My skepticism.
I mean, if they're calling me on a T-Mobile network with an unlocked phone, what more? I mean, is that not sufficient for you?
Well, I just want it to be somebody I know and trust. If you said, Leo, I have an iPhone in my hand that's unlocked, I would believe you, and that would be the end of it.
Maybe I'll get Ryan to lend me his, and then how about that?
Yeah. If you, to your satisfaction, believe that Ryan's is truly unlocked.
Oh, I do, to my satisfaction. He's called me on it.
No. I mean, if you have it in your hand.
Yeah, but I know Ryan. I trust him as much as you say you trust me.
Okay. Well, I think.
Well, I don't see why he would even lie about it. But he's a. What, anyway, let's not get in this subject.
Just to be sure, make sure you get the one that that requires you to bolt that big like household dimmer switch to the back of it.
Well, see, that's the thing. The hardware unlock. I know no one's going to do that. I mean, that's a cool thing. But by the way, we don't know what happened to the other software unlocking company. They seem to have disappeared off the face of the map.
Yeah. Well, that's another big surprise. Here's the thing. If this thing works, there's a subset of people in the U.S. that need it. The people who are totally committed to T-Mobile, who've got 4 or 5 family members on the deal.
Hey, after what we're hearing about AT&T, I'm surprised anybody would want to move to AT&T. What a ghastly company.
Why?
Oh, have you heard about the massive overseas cell phone?
Oh, roaming? Yeah.
There's all sorts of reasons to loathe AT&T.
I've been loathing them forever.
Okay, Alex, go ahead.
I have been hit by it. Not $4,800. I'm not a big heavy phone user, but I've gone, you know, I've made international, like I made a bunch of calls from Heathrow one time. You know, I came back and it was $400, yeah. You know, from, you know, that was Verizon. You know, it was, you know, when you go outside of your continent, bad things are going to happen. You know, when I used the iPhone the whole time when I was in Zimbabwe but I didn't use any of the data.
Yeah, you have to be careful to turn off the data. In fact, this family that they're talking about, they had 3 phones. They did nothing to protect themselves. They just kind of, but they didn't make international calls, and that's what surprised them. It was all data.
Well, and that's the whole thing. You gotta be aware. I mean, I don't think that, to me, it seems like common sense, but I guess it wasn't for them.
I mean, this may sound glib, but you know, if you're in London, you also have to realize that they're going to charge you for water unless you actually ask for tap water. And if they refill your glass without asking, they're going to charge you for that refill. I mean,
really?
This is all. Oh yeah. Like, I actually had the one time that I used my American privilege of being poor saying, no, thank you for the free water you gave me because I ordered one glass and you gave me 41 free ones. So I'm not leaving here until you take off the bill.
Yeah.
And so I'm an American. I'm out of this country in 3 days, whether I get arrested or not. I'm perfectly fine to ruin the dining experience of 30 other people and decrease your tip, sir, by 40% across the entire room. Or you can just take this $40 charge off my bill. Anyway, I mean, it's just I feel sorry for someone who, you know, got hit with a clobber with a huge bill, and I would hope that for some people, AT&T would have long conversations and realize that, okay, well, what if we take some money off of this because we realize that you weren't trying to close a huge business deal with Sunoco, you know, across the United Arab Emirates. You're just a kid who just forgot to turn off his data plan. But anybody who leaves the country with their cell phone enabled and doesn't know that they're going to get clobbered with fees, they should have read both sides of that pamphlet they got when they signed up for the service.
And the thing is that AT&T is paying someone in Europe. They're paying a provider there, so it's not like if AT&T gives you a full refund, it costs them it would cost them probably $2,000 or $3,000 to give you that refund. It's not just like, oh, they're just writing it off.
Right.
It's literally like they owe a provider in Europe for that usage.
And they have given a lot of refunds, but they've slowed that down. Their position being, according to an AT&T spokesperson I talked to, that hey. You know, this has been in the news quite a bit. So, you know, nowadays we're not really being forgiving. People should know. I agree, Leo. They should come up with a different system, though. It's terrible to be even subjected to that possibility.
Yeah.
Even just a click through, just warning you that you're roaming.
Yeah. Often I will get a text message when I go out of the state, out of the country, saying, you know, and a lot of this, you know, it's interesting because this obviously is a problem because. On other phones, the third-party software like Shozu will turn off roaming, will turn itself off, saying, you know, you're international. Unless you explicitly tell me, you probably don't want us doing what we do. Now here's the interesting. Is this Apple's problem or AT&T's problem?
Both their problem.
Well, maybe Apple should have put this warning in.
Yeah, I think they both share some culpability for lack of you know, information dissemination.
This might be Apple showing its lack of experience in the cell industry here.
Yeah, they're new at this.
They've never done it before. They would have it probably happens to every company the first time they make a cell phone, and then they learn.
Yeah. Well, I mean, doesn't Apple's responsibility here sort of end with anticipating this problem and then putting in that pop-up saying, oh, by the way, you're going into roaming. Do you want me to turn off all the expensive features?
Yes.
Because after that, because you can't simply tell them that if someone runs into a billing issue because they went over their minutes and they didn't realize that they're going to be charged 89 cents per minute,
right.
You know, don't go into the Genius Bar at the Apple store and complain because, you know, it's like complaining to the waiter that, you know, that the chocolate cake they bought from next door was too tart.
Right. No, I think that it would be nice to have a little switch in the settings that said international, you know, turn off all the data.
Well, I think that it would be great to also have in the settings just to have it. One thing I was looking for while I was in Zimbabwe was I was looking for somewhere that was telling me what charges over my standard billing was happening. It'd be really great if that was in real time, or, you know, something that within a day you have it. You know,
well, you do have a usage meter. I mean, you can. I reset.
It does have a usage
that.
Meter, but for instance, like the SMS, my data showed up, but it didn't tell me whether I was getting charged for SMS or not.
Yeah.
You know, and so I mean, even though it's free SMS, I am in Zimbabwe. I was expecting to pay a certain amount per every SMS, but I never saw anything come up, and I haven't gotten my bill yet, so I don't know. I really don't know how much it cost me to do that.
And this is I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Good. That's it.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, this is just another reason why, you know, not having a SIM, not having the iPhone in a SIM unlocked state is just a real bummer, because I switched from my first like Sony Ericsson Bluetooth phone to something better. I paid the $20 to somebody to have it unlocked. And now every time that I travel to London, every time I travel to another country, the first stop I make at the airport is to buy one of those $30 prepaid SIM cards. You pop it in and now you've got $30 worth of local calls going for you. Because it'd be great if I could still use my iPhone overseas, and I haven't traveled overseas yet, but man alive, I'm almost at the state where I would consider leaving it behind, because the last thing I want to do is get distracted before I board the airplane and forget to turn it off completely.
Yeah. Here's a question mark that I got from Bob Turner, who emailed us. He was reading the fine print, something nobody seems to do, his AT&T agreement. And by the way, it does say this. Number one, international messages not included. Charges for international messages sent from the U.S. are 20 cents for text messages, 50 cents for picture video messages. Two, and this is, I had not seen this. Of course, I didn't read it. And I'm curious what you say about this. Additional charges for premium messages and content apply. Here's the key. Messages over 300 kilobytes billed an additional 50 cents per message.
Ooh, MMS coming.
I don't know. You know, I have to look at the full agreement. This, it's not, maybe this section is about SMS. Maybe
it's just boilerplate that they cut and paste into every phone they sell. But of course, if I were writing for one of the rumor sites, I'd say, oh, there's a smoking gun, dude. We're going to be able to attach pictures. Oh, wait a minute. It's more than 300K. It's going to be video.
What happens if I get an email that's over 300K? They're going to bill me 50 cents a message. Now I want my itemized box, bill in a box. Maybe now, I mean, talk about conspiracy theory. Now we know why they sent out the bill in the box, because now they could say, well, you turned that off.
Step two, put it in a box. You've got a bill in a box. Hey!
You know what? This whole exercise makes me realize I am so very glad I am not in the cell phone business.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because you just can't please anybody.
Well, no, first of all, you'd have to get by without a human heart. I think it's one of those three valve bovine hearts that they put in there. And that means that the jogging is out, the tennis is out, running for a cab is out.
Well, the reason I actually talked to AT&T about this, because somebody else pointed out, unrelated to this issue, the 300K limit to me. And I called and asked about it. And, you know, their defense is, look, I mean, we have rev share agreements with networks. We've got all these bandwidth issues, and we pay more. When we pay a lot more when the files go over that size, so we've got to recover. That's what they say. Now, I don't know if it's true, but that's what they say.
Ugh. I can't wait till Apple buys into this 700 megahertz frequency, joins up with Google, puts out the iPhone as the Goo phone.
You think that by making like a $7 billion purchase on their American Express card, they're going to keep dropping the cost of TV shows on the iTunes store?
You're right.
That's what you're going to see, $10 for a copy for an episode of Sanford and Son.
What was I thinking? Business Week says that they've heard it from two different sources that Apple is looking at. I don't know what that means. They still have to, if they want to do it, they have to put up a $4.6 billion bond as Google did. The 700 megahertz auction that's coming up January 16th. Of course, that's that prime spectrum that could be used for all sorts of things, including kind of a new wireless network. That's what Google seems to be looking at. They're working on their own Goo phone. Maybe now, I mean, is Apple going to bid against Google, or are they going to bid with Google?
I don't see them bidding with them.
Maybe Apple puts up some and Google puts up some. Remember, Google wanted to insist, one of the conditions Google had was that this be sold off to at a wholesale rate to other participants. So maybe that's what Google's maybe Google's gone to Apple and said, I mean, look, Eric's on the board. Hey, you know, got an extra $5 billion. Want to buy a third of this?
Yeah, it's like that episode of The Honeymooners where Ralph and Ed bought a TV together. That doesn't work out. But Apple's going to need a hell of a partner to make this work. I mean, it's tantalizing to think of. Apple is the king of exploiting the fact of controlling the entire experience end for end. If you give them control of not just the hardware, not just the software, not just the desktop, but also a wireless network, that's just, you know, drool inducing to figure out how that's going to work. But they would need a hell of a major partner to get this up and running. It might be 5, 6, 7, 8 years before they start really taking advantage of
it. I say we continue to cause Apple pain in this cell phone relationship. Make them want to, you know, do it themselves. Just make it so painful for them.
I'm paying my bill in pennies. Yeah. Canadian pennies.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Let's hurt.
I know there are other people behind me at the Apple store. I don't care. 5, 6. Oh, lost count. Gotta start again. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, maybe not going that far. But, you know, I mean, they're certainly feeling pain in this relationship, aren't they?
Well, it's AT&T, and I said from the very beginning that was potentially the big bugaboo. And,
yeah.
I still think it's the big bugaboo. And, you know, here's the deal. This contract's 5 years long. And you look at the run-up to making this new spectrum into something real. That just so happens that's about 5 years.
Yeah, so, maybe. I predict Apple will find a way out of this contract before 5 years is up.
They might.
Or could they make, I mean, nobody's seen the paper. Maybe you have, Scott. But
Could
they make a different phone and sell it on a different network? Or does AT&T have an Apple exclusive, like all phones we own? They couldn't do that. Apple would never do that.
No, but you got to imagine there's some pretty tight language there. And I mean, nobody outside Apple's legal team seen the contract. Apple and AT&T's legal team seen the contract. But there are a lot of analysts who've stepped up, and these are analysts at big companies like Piper Jaffray, and they're talking about what it looks like the contract says. And most people agree it's a fairly exclusive contract for about 5 years. That's the closest number we've gotten. And it does include rev share. And I know everyone loves to scream whenever I say rev share. Well, you know, get on the web and go to Piper Jaffray and see what they say about it. I mean, it's not Scott Bourne saying it. These are well-respected Wall Street analysts saying it. And I think that, you know, that's going to come to an end. And then this spectrum deal might make sense. Because
it would take a while to build something like that. Yeah,
That people think the spectrum deal is going to yield a new phone in a couple of weeks. They're out of their mind.
Well, Google's, you know, everybody seems to agree Google's been working on a phone for a year. Now, whether Google's officially working on a phone or it's somebody's, you know, 5% job, I mean, it's unclear, but there's clearly development going on. And yeah, Google has network resources.
Yeah, I mean, most of their Boston office here is pretty much devoted to phone research, according to things that I've heard in an article, really good article in the Boston Globe last week.
There you go. Apple has sold 1 million phones. It's official. They've released the press release or whatever. They have sold a million units. And that means, are they on track for 10 million? I don't think so.
It depends on Christmas season.
Holidays.
Christmas season typically can be very, very heavy.
They'd have to have the same kind of run-up that they had in the first 2 months, right?
Yeah, you think they're going to sell as much over the holiday season as they did when everybody had like 6 months worth of pent-up, you know, horniness over the iPhone?
They may be counting, though, on European or international sales, too, to make that 10 million, right? I mean, presumably there's the same kind of pent-up demand everywhere else.
Yeah, that's not a U.S. number.
It's a total number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all I can say is the day after the announcement, the Apple store in downtown San Francisco was full of people just hovering around iPhones again.
There was a bunch of guys in the office that bought one immediately. I mean, they were just like, boom.
That was the magic price point. Yeah. Yeah.
Survey U, which is a company that just does college student research, researched college kids all over the country, and apparently their decision to buy an iPhone was pretty much hemmed right in at the $399 price point, which would cause like twice as many to want to buy one as it was before.
as soon as I was watching the keynote presentation, you know, kind of like Oracle in DC Comics. I had like four screens everywhere with operatives giving live coverage. As soon as I saw the $3.99 price drop and saw it appear on three other screens, like being confirmed, my next step was to call the local Apple store to see if that would affect current stock. And then the next step after that was to desperately wait with my hat, my coat, my shoes on for the conference to end so I could drive down to the mall and buy one. And I wasn't even the first one there. Someone seems like every single 4 gig model they had. And I would have been surprised if they had any left by the time the normal people with the real jobs got out of work.
You've all had now a week to take a look at the new iPods. Has anybody picked up a Nano?
Yep. I took one on my trip to New York.
Oh, yeah, I saw it on your Excella picture. Yes. So what do you think?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's not nearly as chunky and unwieldy as the pictures make it out to be.
Once you see it sideways, you realize, oh, this is really, really small.
It really is wafer thin. It's as if like Sanrio made an iPod, you know, big eyes and no mouth. the screen, the detail on the screen is incredible. I had some ITV TV shows that I recorded and converted, and I could actually make out at least the small print at the bottom of one of those fly-by-night mortgage ads.
So it's better than an iPod with video?
I wouldn't say it's better than an iPod with video. I think the screen is exactly as small as you can possibly make it and still make it a credible screen for watching video. Because this is definitely the thing where I'm even on the train, I was just holding it like at around like breastbone level. If I had like left it on the tray, it would have been more of an audio experience than anything else. The big story, though, is the tweak to the user interface, because they have really given an extra coat of polish, an extra coat of paint. It's the familiar iPod interface, but it looks like it was written by people who had finally had as many resources both inside Apple and inside the actual iPod hardware as they could have possibly wanted. Everything is fresher. Everything is more fluid. It's a real treat to work with. The impression that I got was that if Apple had decided not to go with a touchscreen interface for the iPhone, this is what the iPhone interface would have looked like.
Interesting. Didn't Apple end their contract with the company that provided them with the original OS about a year or two ago?
Yep. That died out.
Pixo, yeah. Right?
So, yeah, as a matter of fact, it was such a big difference that when I had my briefing, I asked Greg Joswiak, now, is this running Mac OS, is this running OS 10 like the iPhone? Because it's doing things I'm not used to seeing an iPhone doing. The cover flow feature, it's a little bit jerky, whereas on the iPhone, it's perfectly smooth animation. On the iPod Nano, at least, it's a little bit jerky, but I'm not used to an iPod having computing power that I'm used to seeing on a PDA. And of course, and the answer to that turned out to be no, but it sort of says something that I wondered what kind of system resources were under the hood today.
Somebody told me there's to-do lists as well on the Nano.
I didn't see them. Maybe I just didn't have anything to sync to it.
Right.
But there are all kinds of little touches, like the stopwatch feature. This is the sort of thing that impresses me. I don't know what that says about me. But it has a stopwatch feature, but it has the right-hand side of the screen is given up with little like 60 minutes type icons to show you what you're selecting, album art, and that sort of thing. So when you activate the stopwatch, you know, you see the numeric display, hours, minutes, seconds, fraction of a second. But then you notice that the full color icon of the stopwatch is also going, and the time on the stopwatch also reflects the current time that you're actually recording. And I'm like, oh.
It's little things.
Somebody decide, I'm not cutting corners here. Hell with it. I'm going for broke on this.
Are they still using Pixo? Do you think this is a symptom of a move to OS 10 or just more processor power and so they can do more?
There must be more processor power because it was refreshing the screen a lot. There must be more processor power there. It's not running OS 10 because I asked that specifically and was told no. But I really want to see what the technical spec. I want to see what the breakdown is like. I think that actually someone has already, of course, it amazes me that there's so many resources with people who are going to take their first $200, buy an iPod for the sake of tearing it down and being the first to post disassembly fix. God bless them.
There's also the site that buys one and hits it with a hammer in the parking lot, but that's a different.
Yeah. I'm going to buy one and put it in a blender.
And there's one there. That's right. It's a third site.
A site like that.
Pretty much Apple can guarantee three copies of anything will be sold for three different purposes.
Everybody, but I'm going to buy one and give it to poor orphan children no music in their lives. Aww. Because I think there should be more pleasure in poor
orphan children. I'm going to fill mine with books on tape and send them to certain politicians.
Speaking of books on tape.
Illiterate politician. Teach them how to read.
I'm glad you brought that up.
I did that, didn't I?
You did that. Want to thank our friends at audible.com as always. They have sponsored the podcast for the last 3 months, and I'm proud to say we thought it was going to end in September. They've decided to stick around, so because they're so happy.
They're so happy,
and they ought to be, because we are Audible lovers, audible.com. If you are an Audible listener, you already know, but if you haven't tried it, I invite you to go to audible.com/MacBreak and sign up. You get a credit for a free book, no cost, and we always recommend good books for you to read. In fact, I'm going to put together a page of all our recommendations, because there's quite a few. There's something that almost 100 recommendations. So I think we need to put together a page for that. I've been promising to do that for a while, but I will. I was thinking of recommending it. I haven't read it yet, and so I'm going to ask our panel what they think. The Second Coming of Steve Jobs, Alan Deutschman's book about Steve Jobs. Is it a good book, do you think?
I just downloaded it and haven't had a chance to listen to it.
Then there's also Icon. There's a couple of good, I know good, there's a couple of books about Steve Jobs on Audible worth reading. Jeff Young, who wrote Icon, remember, this was the one that got their books banned from the Apple store. Yeah. Certainly be worth reading to find out why their book got banned. But I'm just curious if either of these books give you any insight into Jobs, why he is the way he is. The Deutschman's going to be a little bit less technological. He's a contributing editor at Vanity Fair. So, well, maybe not. He does cover technology. Nobody's read that one, huh?
No.
Well, anyway, a couple of books.
Especially when it comes to books about Steve Jobs, every time I've read like a section of a book that tries to get into his head or tries to tell the whole story, I see a lot of things that have been cut and pasted from really right. publicly available stuff. I've yet to see something that has real insight, because Steve keeps
so
such a tight rein on that, and also makes it very, very clear to people inside his inner circle that you don't want to talk to that guy, because if you don't want to get free iPods and iPhones, if you want to see that bulge in my shirt pocket and say, hey Steve, what's that, and I say it's something secret that I'm not allowing you to see because I'm still pissed off about the book, hey, go ahead and talk.
Yeah.
But I mean, the first time someone really manages to crack that. And it's going to be a fascinating book, but I really think that's not going to happen until Steve, sees hears the hoofbeats of the mighty steed of death behind him and decides to leave a legacy behind.
You know, I might actually know Steve Jobs better than many, because I've actually spent a long weekend with him and his family, but it was before he went back to Apple, so I don't know if it applies.
What was it, one of those Disney vacations? You were in the magic teacups together and decided to expand it into...
Yeah. No. we have a mutual friend, and it was a 4th of July weekend. It was a lot of fun, and I think I did get some insight into Steve, but I don't think I got, and I certainly didn't get any person. He's not the kind of guy that opens up.
Yeah.
Although we had a long conversation about what Apple should have done. This was, again, before, when he was at Pixar and hadn't rejoined Apple. It was just before. It was like a year before he rejoined Apple. But what they should have done, and how Microsoft basically caught up with Apple with Windows. And he was a little bitter about that. It was very interesting. He actually said they should have licensed the operating system. He clearly changed his attitude after that. But anyway, that would be a couple of good books to try out. There's a lot of good technology books. Another good one would be The Nudist on the Late Shift and Other True Tales of Silicon Valley. Poe Bronson wrote that, and that I can vouch for. It's a really interesting book, but it's a little old. It's about 8 years old, but fascinating. Some great books at Audible, audible.com. That is the website, and if you want to get that free book, that credit to a free book, go to audible.com/MacBreak. We thank Audible for supporting the show, and I can't tell you how much I love Audible. I'm just finishing up Anne Rice's latest Blood and Gold, and oh man, it's good. And I mentioned on Twitter, I'm returning to the Master and Commander series, the Aubrey Maturin series, and I've got three more left, and I'm so sad. Oh, I wanted to mention, somebody said, when you steer people towards the Aubrey Maturin, make sure that they know to get the Patrick Tull versions. There are three different readers, and there's only the best one, awesome, is Patrick Tull. So if you just do an Audible search for Maturin or Patrick O'Brien, get the Patrick Tull version, and Master and Commander is the first one. So there's a few Audible recommendations. We thank them for participating in our show. Let's see, we got the millionth iPhone sold. I'm trying to remember what other stories I wanted to bring up. Anything else people were hot to talk about? Oh, I still want to talk about the iPods. That's right, we'd begun our conversation. The iPod Touch won't be out till later this month, right?
Right.
So nobody's had a chance to play
now,
with
the,
that.
The big thing with the iPod Touch is that people have been talking about is the fact that Apple has for some reason, once again, this is one of those things that you can't figure out what's going on, is that they, the reports are, is that you can't add appointments into your calendar on the touch while you can on the iPhone.
Oh, that's interesting.
From the surface, it appears,
that appears to be
one.
Correct.
What?
That is correct.
It appears that it said that you could on the site, and then it was removed.
Is there a notepad? Can you type notes?
There's no notepad, but there is the code for the virtual keyboard is there. If you're on a web page and you want to post, you want to use webmail, or if you want to post to a message board, any instance in which the on-screen keyboard would pop up in Safari on the iPhone, it will work on the iPod Touch. I did ask that question specifically.
But the big question is why would they take out being able to add stuff to your calendar?
Make you buy an iPhone.
Probably because it's not a feature that's built into an other iPod. So maybe there just aren't any hooks for supporting that, and they just don't want to mess around with that at this stage.
It just seems like it's an iPhone with the phone part not in it.
I'd sure like to see a 16-gigabyte iPhone.
Well, I played with the iPod Touch at the press announcement on the 5th for about 15 minutes, and I was pretty impressed with it. The first thing I noticed was it doesn't have a recessed headphone jack.
Yay!
It's on the bottom instead of the top.
Oh, that's interesting.
No edge, so you're going to surf via Wi-Fi. No camera, no microphone, so you can't talk on it. No speaker, so you can't hear on it. It's just a little bit lighter, just a little bit smaller. And
they say it's a little thinner. Is it thinner?
It is definitely thinner. It's considerably thinner.
I think it's a very, especially the 16 gig, I think that's very attractive.
Yeah, there's so many people who are on the fence who said, gee, if you just delete the phone features and knock some money off the price, I am so there. So I was really surprised.
It's not a PDA, though. And that's kind of, I mean, if you can't enter appointments.
Because a lot of people wanted the ultimate media toy, and they also wanted the ability to surf the web while they're gone. And actually, I'm sort of in that camp. I mean, I would certainly miss the email features on my iPhone. But the greatest use I get out of my iPhone is just access to blog lines and access to the mobile editions of so many different news sites.
Still has a photo album. Still has YouTube. You've got your clocks, of course, contacts, calendar. Obviously, you'd have... Well, maybe not, obviously. Can you enter new contacts in? Maybe not if you can't do anything on the calendar. Maybe they're both read-only.
It seems like it's an iPhone when it's running Safari, and it's an iPod under other circumstances.
I see. So that's the only time you have access to
it. It's another one of those things that seems artificial.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't seem like the phone's really not capable of doing it. It's like Apple's differentiating it with software, I always hate it when companies do that.
I hate that when Intel artificially limited its chips by turning off the cache that was in there. That just bugs the heck out of me.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't judge them too harshly at this stage because I have a whole box full of media players by SanDisk right now, and they're wonderful, wonderful things, especially if you want to get the most number of features for the least amount of money. If you want to get essentially the basic feature set of the iPod Touch, Sansa can sell it to you for $100 less. But it does show the difference between the philosophy of saying, if there's a feature we can think of, we're going to put it in here, versus the idea of saying, no, we have a story to tell with this product. This is a great, interesting little tidbit, but it doesn't belong in this story, so we're not going to clutter things up. The Sansa players are really, really wonderful, but they don't have that same level of elegance that the iPods do.
That's a good point. Apple's very good at stripping it down, huh?
I guess, but I don't see how being able to add stuff to your calendar would really make it much more cluttered or much more complicated. It's one of those things where we're all very happy with the way they designed that story for the iPhone, and we just want to do a couple of other things, you know, with it, you know, because you really do want to do all those things on your iPod. You really don't want to carry a PDA. You really want to be able to input that stuff. So, you know, and I get that it's to push you to get the iPhone, but I just think it's, you know, crap.
Well, also you want to make sure this is Apple is good at learning from its mistakes. There are so many times in Apple's history where if someone walked into a store and said, I want a Mac, they would say, okay, which one of these 14 different models with negligible differences do you want to get? Whereas right now they say, okay, do you want a desktop, an iMac, a PowerBook, a MacBook, or this little hot plate model? which are easily and carefully differentiated from each other. It'd be great if a lot of these things, these models could do things the other ones did, but it does simplify things greatly. And then I don't deny that there's a profit motive, but there is an advantage. There is a tactical, there is an advantage to users to having a streamlined product line that's very, very easy to get.
Well, I think when there's clearly something different, you know, when you're clearly paying less for something because, you know, there's not as much RAM or there's not as much, there's a different video RAM or whatever. But when you're looking at something that looks almost identical to the one that does it, and it just simply was turned off. That's the part that it'd be like making a little less of an OS. It'd be like, well, you're only using an iMac, so we're gonna turn off a bunch of the stuff for the OS.
As everybody on message boards have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, Apple exists. Their joy comes from pissing off their existing users. So if they put all the features into the first version, think of all the millions of early adopters who would not get pissed off in December when a software update comes out.
I almost believe you.
Read their business plan. It's all there in black and white.
I almost bought that. Are you ready for your picks, ladies and germs? I know we are.
Yes.
All right. Sounds like you're ready, Scott Bourne. So why don't you start? Kick us off.
Well, my pick is a hardware pick. And I know that that's a little more expensive than a software pick, but I think it's a good one. And it is the new Shure adapter cable that lets you use your existing headphones on the iPhone.
I want it so badly. I have to get to the Apple store. I have it. I put it on Amazon. I put it as a pre-order, and it still hasn't come. So I think I have to go to the Apple store.
They had them at the Apple store, and they sold out like instantly.
Now, so, originally you said it maybe was a little too much cordage.
It does, but I've made it a pick now because I've used it enough to realize that is a small price to pay to get to use my good headphones. And what I do like about it is the fact that I can click to call, click to answer type of stuff, and it all works.
Yeah, I love that.
I like to be able to double click through songs I don't like on my iPod. Of course, I could just remove them from my iPod, but I haven't gotten to that.
What headphones are you using with?
Oh, I got like three or four different kinds. I'm using Anamonics. I'm using...
What do you like?
I don't like any of them. Oh. I'm trying to find the... You know what I really want, Leo? I want those kind where I think you've got them, where they form them into your ear.
Yeah, I have them for the TV, but you have to go to an audiologist and he has to make molds. Yeah, Ultimate Ears will do it. Edimotics will also do it. Musicians do that, obviously.
Yeah, I'm looking to get some of those.
I would, if I were you. Yeah. If I were made of money like you are, Thurston, I'd be out there right now.
It's the time that's not the money.
It's a little weird. By the way, I'll tell you who does it in San Francisco. It's the San Francisco Audiological Center.
Yeah,
that's where we get our molds made. You go in, they pour this rubbery thing into your ear, and they keep a string in it, by the way. So it looks like a little bit like you got a tampon in your ear, which is an attractive look, I think. And then you have to sit there for a little while it hardens. But the most fun is when they pull on that string and it goes, and it's really loud because it's in your ear.
You know,
I have a picture in my Flickr feed. I have a picture on my Flickr feed from Macworld Expo of somebody having that done, and the expression on their face, it's like they're trying desperately not to think of that scene from Star Trek 2 where Chekhov is in the sand cave with Khan.
That's kind of what it's like. On the other hand, I should say, if you were properly prepared for it, it could be pleasurable. It's just that you just don't know what to expect.
Cost you an extra 30, though.
Yeah.
I have to admit, with mine, you know, I decided I liked the bass response from my Ultimate Ears better than the Shure's that I had. But the Shure
really
has
those $600 Shure's, really?
No. I didn't have the $600 Shure's. Oh. I only had the $200 Shure's.
Oh, okay.
No, the $600 Shure's are nicer, but the Ultimate Ears were $250 or something like that. And the Ultimate Ear ones, there's a slightly larger opening the bass was a little better than the little $200 Shure's that I had. But the Shure comes with that 3-level flange. And I found that if I took the 3-level flange from the Shure and I stuck them onto the Ultimate Ears, because the Ultimate Ears, none of the little ear.
Yeah, that's what I don't like about Ultimate Ears. They just have those little rubber knobs on them.
And it didn't work for me at all. I just kept them falling.
I like
out.
The so flanged took, knobs.
Right. So I took the Shure ones and I stuck them onto the Ultimate Ears and then shoved them in my ears. And admittedly, for the first like day or two, it was my ears had to kind of expand to really, you know.
You gag a little bit, don't you? Because it's going.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
This is just not sounding very pleasurable.
But I got to tell you now it's all I use. I mean, those things are on me all the time.
That's why I love my Edimotics.
Can we get recommendations for the second best choice, please?
Now, there is a company.
Think of the second best choice, Scott. What does this solution do that Belkin's like little $10 pass-through stubby connector doesn't do?
In terms of this thing, it gives you the ability to use the click functions.
It has the button on it.
It has a mic.
So you can talk into it when you're on the phone, and you can click to hang up. You can click to move your song along. So that's the difference.
How's the mic? Does it sound good?
The mic sounds as good or better than the one that you get from Apple.
Do you want to call us?
No, we'll do that later.
Okay. Just if you place a call, I can give you a number. You can just place a call. That's all right. Don't worry about it.
He just doesn't want his real phone number here on your caller ID.
I now have Scott Bourne's number. That was my plan.
Actually, I sent the phone out of the room because I was afraid it was making those noises.
There's a company called Ultimate Buds. Ultimate Bud. That you send them. This is pretty funny. You send them your iPhone headset and your, Shure's or whatever you got, and they do the soldering, and it's not very expensive. It's $39, and they'll turn, they'll merge the two into Ultimate Buds.
They send you a box of tetrahydrocannabinol.
That makes me want to do that.
I'm a little nervous about it. If anybody's used Ultimate, has done this, please let us know. You can, by the way, they have new products as well. You can buy it for $150. You get the whole thing.
Well, next week they're going to start shipping a number of different, headphone solutions that are already pre-configured for the iPhone. But if you don't want to,
who's they?
There's three or four companies that have promised to have product to us next week. In fact, for review,
I have a Rivet. Rivet sent me theirs, and it's fine. It's okay. They're cheap. They're $30. The only advantage really over the Apple thing is they're a little bit more in-ear, and they have they're a lanyard style, so you hang it around your neck, which I do like.
It's just some people don't want to spend the money on a new set of headphones, so I thought this little deal I think it was $40 or whatever I paid for it, but it's good. It works.
Excellent.
So that's my pick. The Shure iPhone headphone adapter.
Shure iPhone headphone adapter.
It has a product number, but I have no idea what it is.
People know it. People know it. This seemed like the best way to go because you've already got, especially if you already got really good headphones and you don't want to.
And by the way, it does work with I do think my favorite pair of headphones for flying are the Bose noise canceling. That's what I use mostly.
Really?
And it works with those.
Andy sounds skeptical.
No, it's just that I see these people with those Princess Leia noise canceling headphones that take a motorcycle battery for an hour and a half for the noise canceling stuff. Meanwhile, I've got my nice Edemonic or Shure like silicone earbuds, and it does. I tried both of them. I tried like four different kinds, like for a column once, and I just couldn't tell the difference between in audio quality. The silicone earbuds were even better at giving me a quiet environment. And on top of everything else, I mean, I can put both my iPod and these headphones inside an Altoids case and put it in my pocket. I don't know what I'm going to do with this big Mac case, size case, and that I'm going to lose or leave behind on a plane.
I have two words for you, Andy.
First,
ear fatigue.
Ear fatigue. No, you're right. Having those stuck in your ear does take a little getting used to. I agree.
I still want to get used to, but I have to say, I go on flights and I will literally have my headphones in for 15 hours.
Yeah.
I
do it on Air Canada because Air Canada repeats every announcement in English and French. So
the volume is like four times louder than
it's really
the
loud. They talk a lot. They give you a lot of excess information, as most Canadians do. So, I love Canada. I love Canada. I love Canadians. It's just friendly, but it's in French. And they do it again in bad French, really bad French. That's what
I was trying to explain to someone. I was actually talking to a stewardess about this. I was like, the only thing I want to know is how long when we're about to land, put on your seatbelt, or we're about to take off.
Yeah.
I don't really care what's out the window.
No.
I really don't care about how much closer we are. I just want you just let's minimize all of this.
And
stuff.
That's when I jam in my Edemotics because you can't hear a bloody thing.
Well, the big problem I have is if I plug in and I decide to watch anything on the actual screen, then you get annihilated, with your little earphones.
The other thing that's annoying is that they actually make you take them out. They think it's a safety hazard. So when they're talking, at the beginning, once you're 10 minutes into the flight, but at the beginning, you have to listen.
I like it also because you can actually use it as long. You can use your electronic devices actually much longer if you have the earphones in, because you always have a good reason for why you didn't hear the announcement.
Huh? You'll look really good covered in jet fuel, telling a news reporter, "Well, I wanted to hear the end of the song."
The worst, they never give you peanuts when you do that. That's the problem. They just go right by you. Oh, you wanted the beverage? Sorry. Didn't hear you.
The peanuts are for people with a good over-the-ear headphones, like they once made for Bose.
You have to buy from Bose if you want headphone. All right. Thank you, Scott Bourne. Andy Anatko, a pick of the week.
Pick of the week is one of my best finds for the past 6 or 7 weeks, really, because I was in an evil, evil mood after a really, really just one of those really awful days that says, you know, there's only one solution for this. I need to lay down on my couch. I need to put on the headphones. I need to listen to some classical music for an hour and try to get again, you know, that sort of thing. So I went to the iTunes store, did some search for some Mozart that I hadn't already heard a million times, and I discovered the podcast from a company called Magnatune, Magnatune. I start downloading these hour long. They're a music company, they're a publisher that have, you know, all these recordings of classical, jazz, pop rock, all these sort of independent recordings, and they just give the damn things away. You can subscribe to the podcast, and a few times a week, another hour of brilliant music will land on your iPod. It'll be wonderful stuff. There are no ads. As a matter of fact, every podcast begins with another podcast for Magnatune. We're not evil. which is a lot to live up to, but a great thing. So not only is it a great thing for getting free music on your iPod, but it's also they also have an open license for anybody who wants to use their music in their podcast, so long as it's non-commercial. Right. So if you're looking for interstitial music, intros, outros, something to make it a little more interesting, they'll give it to you for free. And if you're doing a commercial podcast, they'll sell it to you at pretty damn cheap. If you want to buy, walk through their library on magnatune.com, their downloads are unlocked, no DRM, MP3 files, and they're dirt cheap. So I can't tell you how many hours I've spent just drifting through the Magnatune catalog, because it's like Santa Claus arrives several times a week delivering some immensely great music that I often, as often as not, wind up buying just to get the discrete tracks, because it's just such great stuff.
I didn't know they did a podcast. I'm going to have to get that, yeah.
If you do a search on the iTunes store for Magnatune, I've got it in front of me right now. They've got 150 podcasts.
Wow.
Medieval flute, space music, great pianos, Renaissance, Philharmonia, choral, New Age piano, sitar, a sitar podcast.
Wow.
How many people are saying, gee, I really want another hour of sitar music on my iPod? Well, here you go. And it's free.
John Buchman, the guy who founded Magnatune, we interviewed him about a year ago on Inside the Net, if people want to listen to that, Inside the Net 33. He has another site called Bookmooch, you probably would like, Andy, where people swap books.
Yeah, I've heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's neat. So I'm going to subscribe to that. I had no idea they had a podcast. What a great way to get new music on your iPod or whatever device you use, or Sansa. It would work on a Sansa. You know, Alex, Lindsay, and I were talking the other day. The meme, the Alex meme, has really spread. It's everywhere. In fact, I saw a cartoon the other day where somebody, was it you who sent me that, Scott? Where somebody would said, "Oh, it's only one Alex."
No, I did not, but I saw it.
Yeah. I want to give credit to the cartoon, but I can't remember who did that. But anyway, it's amazing that the unit Alex, which is $700, by the way.
Yeah, it's a one unit.
It's a one Alex. How many Alexes today, Alex?
It is about a third of an Alex.
Oh wow! No,
maybe a quarter of an Alex. It's about a quarter of an Alex. And so this is a program that I'm just starting to play with. But I think it's pretty cool. So one of the things that, you know, we're doing all these projects and we're trying to keep track of all the projects, and we play with lots and lots of productivity tools, you know, how to keep track of a project and a whole bunch of them and who's all involved and what they're doing and everything else. And so a program that we're starting to play with right now is by a company called Market Circle, and it's called Daylight.
Oh, yeah. Very familiar with Daylight. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's and Daylight, it, you know, it's something that I have to check back in a couple months to say whether it really works. Because with productivity stuff, it's not whether it looks good when you start; it's whether you're still using it 2 months from now.
Right.
But it really it's nice because it's really a Mac app. You know, it's not trying to be cross platform. It's taking advantage of all the things that Coco gives you and all the libraries, and it looks pretty and it integrates really well with your mail and with iCal and, you know, all those other things. You can really attach a lot of the stuff to it. So it is right now it looks, you know, you can do tasks, you have schedules, you can look at your workflow. You know, you can manage the projects, you know, overall. So a lot of this stuff looks like it's something that we're going to have a lot of fun with. And so far, you know, we just haven't been really that happy with just about anything we try. So, we end up back in, pages, just laying stuff out of who's going to do what and FileMaker, you know, building our databases.
Wow, I mean, we run a lot primitive. Of stuff. No wonder this would be a big improvement.
Well, we use I would say we build some fairly complicated FileMaker databases to maintain.
Yeah, but
most
Daylight
of the stuff.
Really is designed for team management, which is
true. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're really looking at. Because right now, I mean, we have a database that kind of runs all the stuff we have databases for different shows that really are customized to the show and keep track of what needs to get done and what doesn't need to get done and how it needs to get done. But we're not good enough to really integrate it with Mail and iCal and everything else from FileMaker. And so it's a little limited that way. We want to really get it to where all the communications, you know, stay piped into the system. And it looks like this is going to be something that allows us to do that.
Very cool. It's not cheap, but there is a trial version.
So you can try it for 30 days.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
usually enough.
I used it, but I don't have a team. So, I was very impressed with it. It's probably the most powerful kind of contact manager and organizational tool on the Mac.
We'll be on your team, Leo.
You're on my team, but I don't need to keep track of you. I let you wander at will. And by the way, we should mention that Paul Mason has that great MBW picks site. So we don't keep track of our picks. They're in the show notes, but we don't really do a good job of keeping track of all of our picks. But you can go to mbwpicks.com and get your picks there. Actually, there's two sites. There's also mbwpicksoftheweek.com. So take your pick of the picks. and I guess I have to pick something, don't I? I have so many things to choose from. You know, I think one something I'll mention that I haven't mentioned before, and everybody probably already knows about, but it really is something you should be using if you're not. It's called Growl. You all know about Growl.
Yeah.
Growl.
It's a free kind of that kind of growl. It's in the system. It's a system preference pane. It's free. What I like about Growl is actually maybe it's not in the system. I thought it was. Yeah, it is. It integrates in with a lot of applications. I mean, pretty much. Any real Mac application supports Growl. What Growl does is it allows that application to send you notifications, and you can customize the notifications. You can have them up in the window in a variety of beautiful ways. You can do sound. You can take over the window if you want. You can have the notifications stay there so that, for instance, I use it all the time when I'm FTPing. Growl will let me know when the FTP is done. And if I've wandered away, when I come back, I can see in a second what's going on because it works with Panics. Transmit beautifully. If you don't have Growl, get Growl. It's fantastic and it's absolutely free. And the Christopher Forsyth, Kevin Ballard, James Van Dyne, Ingmar Stein, and the Growl team deserve a lot of credit for it. It's growl.info, growl.info. And if you have a Mac and you don't have Growl, this is a zero, Alex. You really ought to. I've been playing a lot with WordPress, and I've been very impressed with WordPress's plugins lately. I've redone my blog at leoville.com/blog. Starting to sound like Dvorak. leoville.com/blog. And I found a really, this is my second pick, but I found a really cool template that you can integrate into any other template for the iPhone. It does a really nice job, I think, of making an iPhone version of your site. It's from iwphone.contentrobot.com. And, if you go on your iPhone to leoville.com/blog, you'll see it's got a completely different design that's specific for the iPhone. And,
how does this work?
It's just a separate template for WordPress. So it's a plugin basically. You install it and the theme, and what it will do is it queries the user agent, and when it sees iPhone in the user agent, it says, okay, you get a better template. And it's a very nice mode. Now, obviously, the iPhone handles the site fine as a regular website, but this is a little lighter weight, and
Web 2.0.
Yeah, it's very...
It's very RSS-y.
Yeah.
We're installing it as we speak on Apple Phone Show.
Oh, you are? Yeah. I think it's a really good idea because... You know, obviously the iPhone can look at any Safari page and, you know, a web page with Safari, and it looks fine. In fact, my site looked absolutely fine. You zoom in, and Safari's very smart about where to zoom in on. But this just gives it more of a, yeah, more like an RSS feed look to it.
Yeah, there must be something in the air, because I finally, after like 3 or 4 months worth of looking at different content management systems, I finally decided upon WordPress as the CMS I'm going to use to replace my 15-year-old AppleScript custom-made blogging system. And actually, this is as good a time as any to make a certain plea to the God bless you, listeners. You are Americans' heroes. You're the world's heroes, because you are gentle, giving, intelligent, good-looking. Did I say good-looking? Good-looking. Great-looking people.
Nice teeth, too.
I'm a person who, I understand all the web technologies. I've written software for managing web technologies. I have never used WordPress before. So if you have any advice on a really good book, a really good tutorial, a really good discrete resource, discrete in terms of one thing I can click on as opposed to, well, go to this message board and look for this thread and look for this thread. I'm looking for something that basically says, you're an idiot. We will help you to become less of an idiot with WordPress, especially when it comes to creating custom themes. I would love to hear it. There's obviously a lot of interest in this, because I put up something on my Twitter saying, basically with the exact same message, as of 24 hours later, the ratio of people with actual advice versus the people who are saying, hey man, make up a list and send it to me because I'm interested in too, currently sits at about 1 to 18. So,
you know, I have to say, though, of all the, and I've used a lot of CMSs, of all of them, the WordPress is the easiest to install, the easiest to grok, the easiest to change. Just get a good template and work from there. I think you'll find it's not that difficult.
Yeah, it's quite lovely.
Much easier than Drupal. I know you had trouble with Drupal.
I've still got scars on my forehead where I was improvidently banging my head against the hard part of the desk.
Yeah, WordPress must feel like a breath of fresh air after Drupal.
You know, the first time I was able to actually put a picture in a blog post without having to run anything on the command line, I thought, yes, WordPress is greater than Drupal.
And WordPress gets a lot of attention for being a blog program, which it is. I mean, it's probably the best blogging software out there. But because you can create pages of any kind.
The latest version, with the 2007 editions, that's what really put the final nail in the coffin for me, that I can actually make it look like a site as opposed to just a blog.
Completely arbitrary pages. In fact, the front page can be a page. It makes it much easier. And you'll be surprised, Andy. Give yourself a couple of days. I think you'll find it's not too difficult. I'm using a lot of plugins. No.
I'm not finding it difficult. It's the good type of difficult where I can see what I can do if I just become a little less dumb, as opposed to Drupal, which at times said, no, this is not for you. You think you're a nerd, but you're not a nerd.
No, you have to be a hardcore nerd.
You failed the nerd test, and I have nothing but contempt for you. The idea that you want to use a picture in a blog post without you knowing how to program in Perl. Be gone!
I do. I can recommend, and in fact, I'll send you a list of the plugins that I've used effectively. And I'm using about a dozen plugins. They're just excellent. In fact, I have a link, a post on the site that has a few of them, including that IW phone, which is really nice. But I use one I really like is On This Day, which shows because I have, now you probably have the same thing. I have posts going back to 2001 on this blog. So when you go to the blog, you'll see what I was saying, you know, on this date in the past, which is kind of fun.
Basically, the theme of my blog is going to be backpedaling. I'm going to be posting my columns from the Sun Times. Perfect. When I find out that I got something wrong, I'll just change it and pretend that it never happened.
What are you talking about?
I need a phrase translated into Latin as well as the slogan for the site. If I want the Latin, what it means in Latin, it says the First Amendment only applies to me.
That would be good. All right, there you go. Any Latin scholars out there, and I'm sure there are quite a few. And if you're from Denmark, I'd like a recording of To Be or Not to Be in Danish. That's another.
Oh, my God.
My daughter's doing Hamlet, and they've decided to. It's a multimedia Hamlet playback, To Be or Not to Be in Danish. So here's your chance to be immortalized in Sonoma County.
Welcome to This Week in Obscure Math Quest.
What's different? So what's new? All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to wrap this up. I would do it in Latin and Danish if I could, but instead I'll just say another Mac break is broke. Thanks for joining us.